Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this first weekend of April, the 3rd of April, 2010, 10:30 in the a.m., a Final Four weekend, a baseball opening weekend for baseball, even though I believe opening day is truly the true real opening in baseball. We have Sunday Night Baseball tomorrow with the Yankees and Red Sox clashing. But we'll begin in Indianapolis, where the Final Four is the center of the sports world right now. You have a Final Four that is a nice mix and balance as far as the teams go. You have your powerhouses in Michigan State, Duke, Michigan State, and you have your newcomers, so to speak, in Butler and West Virginia, even though I know West Virginia's been there before. As long as you have to go back to the Hot Rod Humvee, Jerry West days back in 1959. I think West might have been in the NBA by then. I think probably Hot Rod Humvee. Well, anyway, it's been 1959 since West Virginia has been in the Final Four. And when you look at this Final Four, you look at the fact, and this has been talked about over the course of the week, that it is about the programs and not about the individual superstars who are taking center stage at this Final Four. There's nothing wrong with that. College basketball is supposed to be about the name on the front, not the name on the back. You don't need great players to be in the Final Four for it to be a successful Final Four. As long as you have storylines, that's just the thing you're looking for at a Final Four is great stories. And this Final Four, certainly with Butler, if there was no other storyline other than Butler, then you would be fine. Because they been basically, 6 miles away from Indianapolis, from the Lucas Oil Field, becoming just the second mid-major team since 1979 to make it to the Final Four. Of course, you had George Mason back in 2006, and you have that's a story enough. You got the coach who looks about my age, but a couple years older, but still, you got a coach who looks like he's about to be in high school. 10 years ago wasn't even in college basketball. They have a great story with just Butler alone. And again, I'm looking forward to it. There's no clear cut favorite whatsoever. People want to put Duke as a favorite, so be it. I think Duke has the most talent out of all these teams. I wouldn't put them as the favorite in terms of who's going to win this thing. Any one of these four teams can win it. Just know that any one of these teams are capable of winning a national championship. It's not, if I were to rate it, I'd probably go West Virginia, Michigan State, Duke, and Butler in that order. But the difference between one versus four is splitting hairs. I think you really are. If this tournament has taught us anything, it's taught us that, we need to get out of the predicting business and just let the games play themselves out. I think when you look at the final four, you really want to play that first game, because I think the second, and even Final Four, if a team is just that much better than everybody else, it doesn't matter. They can play on Monday afternoon. It wouldn't make a difference. Kids can play last year with North Carolina. North Carolina played a late game and then blew out Villanova and then destroyed Michigan State in the championship. It doesn't matter if your team is just that much better than everybody else. But in an even Final Four like this, I think But either Butler or Michigan State will have a nice advantage over Duke or West Virginia, considering that they're playing early today. I think it's a big deal to play early get your team out the way. Have your team know who they know. Have your team not know who they're going to play, and then just go back to the hotel, chill out, relax, have dinner, and get ready to start prepping for the national championship. Marcheski brought up a good point about how how things can go wrong if you're playing that second game. He was talking about the 91 Final Four. Ironically, that was the first year he won a national championship. And he was saying, how North Carolina had just played Kansas. It was a good game. Kansas, of course, beat North Carolina. And how he had to take his team back into the locker room to kind of get a refocus and say, hey, we're not playing Kansas, we're playing UNLV. Little things like that can be a distraction if you're playing that second game. It's, you're used to winning and not knowing who you're going to play come NCAA tournament time. Teams kind of get accustomed to that, waiting who they're going to play. But it's a little bit different if you are in that second game and you're waiting for a team and you know the team that you watch the team just win and you're about to face off against your opponent. So, I think that the first team to win that first game winning will have a definite advantage, not a big advantage, going into that championship game. Again, this Final Four is not about the individual players. It's about the programs and about the coaches. You want to know who the stars are of the Final Four. You have a couple of NBA players that are going to make play in the next. Play at the next level. I mean, Deshaun Butler, Singler, Shire will all play in the NBA. I don't know how good they'll be, but they'll all play in the NBA. Certainly the Hayward kid out of Butler will be a future pro. He's only a sophomore right now, so he definitely is going to be a pro in the next year or two. The stars are the coaches. I mean, you're talking about. And now, with all due respect to the Butler coach, I mean, he's still making his name. Now, this is definitely, to make a Final Four at the age of 33 is definitely impressive, but he's not on the level of these other three coaches the three other coaches when you talk about Krzyzewski, Izzo, and Bob Huggins. Bob Huggins, you can say what you want about Bob Huggins. I know he's been, over the course of his career, being depicted as being surly, as being, had some problems in his later days at Cincinnati. The guy can play out coach. I mean, he's won everywhere he's gone, taking two different programs to the Final Four, which is not easy to do. And he does not get the best talent in the world. He gets good talent, but he does not get, he doesn't get North Carolina talent. He doesn't get Duke talent. He doesn't get, UConn-type talent. I mean, look what he's done with this West Virginia program. I mean, he's taking this program. And again, D-Line did an excellent job in West Virginia. Did an excellent job. And he's kept some of the D-Line's principles with that 1-3-1. He's kind of kept that during his coaching tenure at West Virginia. But Huggins is a big-time coach. There's no way around it. Some of the Cincinnati teams got eliminated earlier than people might have thought. Like, hey, that happened to Roy Williams. At Kansas, how many times did some of his teams get knocked out earlier than what they should have? It tends to happen when you're trying to build a program where you have some, Jim Calhoun with Connecticut had some teams that got put out before you won a championship, they got put out earlier than what they probably should have. That happens when you're trying to build a program, when you're trying to win a championship. Huggins can play out. Huggins is a better coach than John Calipari. For all Calipari's, 31 seasons, equal talent, Huggins is a better coach. So you have Huggins, you have Izzo, and of course you have Coach K, who apparently has a new title, is the devil now, according to the Indianapolis Star. I just want to know, if you're an editor, how could that go through and even make it to the final edition if you're an editor of that newspaper? I mean, are you kidding me? You're going to depict one of the legendary figures in college basketball, a guy who was on the Mount Rushmore of coaches of college basketball as with horns, as a devil? How did that even, if Krzyzewski didn't have better things to do with his time, I would sue. development success he's made. I mean, of course, your coach is trying to win a national championship. You know, this thing happened in the off season, which he probably wouldn't, but that's just hypothetically saying it happened in the off season. I probably would sue the Indianapolis Star for that. I mean, that was ridiculous. So the coaches that are the stars of this Final Four and the programs, and not the individual players. Again, you have a nice mix. Have a nice mix of you know, of underdogs and favorites and powerhouse programs in this Final Four. Should be great. I will be back later in the program with my predictions and my thoughts on who will be cutting down the nets come Monday night. I also will tell you which coach I would take in this Final Four. You might be surprised by my answer, so stay tuned for that later on in the program. Just getting started here on this Saturday morning, beautiful weekend. It's been a great week of weather as far as I'm concerned in the D.C. area, and we deserve it considering the kind of weather we had. When we return, I will come back and finish up my baseball preview with the NL West, which is, again, should be another exciting year of NL West baseball. We'll talk about that. And also, we'll talk about NBA playoff. We'll talk about the playoff push in the NBA. That and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, 41 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. Again, if you have any comments, any questions for me, you can hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald or go to my Facebook page, William Gerald. Again, any comments or questions, hit me up there. I frequently check those particular pages, especially Facebook page, so you can hit me up with that and with any questions on that, on any topics. Kobe Bryant has signed a 3-year extension to remain with the Los Angeles Lakers through the 2013-2014 season. Bryant could have opted out of his contract after this season and became a free agent. New York Yankee third baseman Alex Rodriguez claims he definitely received performance-enhancing drugs from a Canadian doctor, Anthony Galea. Galea claimed that he treated Rodriguez in March of 2009 after A-Rod had hip surgery. NBA scores. The Lakers snap a 2-game losing streak with a 106-92 win over the Utah Jazz. San Antonio is playing well right now. Takes out Orlando 112-100. Manu Ginobili, who's found the youth all of a sudden, has 43 points to lead the way for the Spurs. Houston defeats Boston in overtime 119-114. Cleveland continues to own Atlanta. This is 10 straight times they've beaten Atlanta. Regular season and playoffs 93-88. LeBron James, Cleveland wins their 60th game of the season. LeBron James goes for 27 points and 13 rebounds. Phoenix is playing well right now. They've won their 10th straight game. They take out Detroit 109-94. Charlotte 87-86 over Milwaukee in overtime. Other winners in the association include Golden State, Miami, and Chicago. In that Golden State New York game, you had something occur that hadn't occurred since the 70s. David Lee, who's had a remarkable season, had 37 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists. Became the first player since Lou Alcindor, and I think he was Lou Alcindor at the time. He might have been Kareem, but Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to go for 30, 20, and 10 in a game. I think Kareem, that particular game, had something like 35 points, 20 rebounds, and 12 assists in that game. So a great game for David Lee, who's talented, whose game and his year has been wasted by such a poor New York Knicks team. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, again, taking you to the 11:30 hour, taking you to the bottom half of the 11 o'clock hour, 11:30. A couple of things before I move on with the baseball. We will be doing a Monday night program, previewing the NCAA championship. So we'll do that. have a 30-minute program previewing the NCAA championship as well as looking back at the Final Four and also looking at opening day in baseball. So stay tuned to that on Monday night at 8 p.m. Saturday morning wake-up call returns to Monday night to kind of wrap up the tournament and kind of try to make that transition into baseball. That is one of the best days in sports, closing one season in college basketball and really opening another in Major League Baseball, though I know that baseball will officially start Sunday night with Yankees Red Sox. Opening day is opening day. Sunday night or not, I still think there's nothing quite like opening day of a baseball season. And speaking of baseball, we move on in our baseball preview to the NL West, which is going to be a very good race. Here's how I break down the NL West. And I would say that there are three contenders, a wild card, and a team that is building towards 2012. Not 2011. That year is dead. They're done, and they're not doing anything in 2011 either. 2012. And I'm going to deal with the contenders first. The San Francisco Giants, it's going to be very interesting to watch them. Last year, they came out of nowhere, had an excellent season. They had, of course, they were led by the pitching. To me, they had the best pitcher in baseball. I mean, I know people love Roy Halladay, Zach Greinke, they're great. But to me, if I'm starting off a team right now, you made me start considering age, ability. Tim Lincecum is the best pitcher in baseball. Two-time Cy Young winner. The Giants made the smartest move they've made since picking up Barry Bonds as a free agent in the summer of 1992 in terms of signing Lincecum. That was the smartest move that they could have ever made in signing him and not letting him become an outright free agent and not even stretching this thing out. I mean, wrapping him up 2 years, $23 million, which is a bargain for what he's already done. The guy is he's won two Cy Youngs. You put him with Matt Cain, Barry Zito, Jonathan Sanchez, that's the best starting pitching staff in the National League, in my opinion. I think I will put that. You can put them up against anybody in baseball. I still take the Red Sox overall in baseball, but that starting pitching staff will keep the Giants. That pitching staff alone, along with a good bullpen, will keep the Giants in this race, not only for a wild card. They'll be in the wild card race, but also for a division title. I think the Giants will be a little bit better this year. I like the signing of DeRosa. I'm not so sure about Aubrey Huff. I don't know how much gas he has left in the tank, but the most time is very good. Sandoval Pitt will be better than he was last year. 25 homers, had 90 RBIs. I expect those numbers to go up. Question about the Giants is going to be the question throughout the whole course of the whole season. Can their offense, generate enough runs to support that great pitching they have? Because they have tremendous pitching. Their pitching is very good. It's great. So that will be the question all year long. I think the offense will be improved, and I think the Giants will be right there as far as winning that division and getting a wild card. I think Colorado, out of the contenders, are the most balanced as far as offense, pitching, and bullpen. Colorado has I love Colorado's you have to love their offense. I mean, you talk about guys like Brad Houck, Helton still can hit. Tulowitzki is one of the best players in the National League as a shortstop, kind of like a poor man's Derek Jeter. Their pitching, again, their starting pitching is very underrated. Guys like, guys like Morales, Jimenez, DeRosa, Hamill, Francis was once their number one starter. He's probably going to be their number five. They're probably going to be their fifth starter. They have a deep bullpen. Once they get back Hudson Street, who will start off the year on the DL, the bullpen will be even that much deeper. Colorado kind of has become Dr. Tampa Bay of the National League right now as far as how they develop talent. And they're not going to overpay for the free agents. They develop their talent. They have a great farm system. And they're going to be around for a long time. Dan O'Dowd has done a great job, the general manager, with how he's positioned Colorado to be contending for years and years to come. Again, they'll be absolutely will be right there come come playoff time, when they will be playing definitely meaningful games in September. The Dodgers, again, is a third contender. The Dodgers, everybody loves the Dodgers. Everybody's going to pick the Dodgers to win this division. I don't think the Dodgers are going to win this division. I think the Dodgers are going to be chasing the Rockies and Giants. The thing about the Dodgers, they have the best lineup. They might have the best lineup from top to bottom in the National League offensively. I mean, they have a tremendous offense. You know, when you guys talk about guys like James Looney, Ether, you know, Kemp, Russell Martin, and I didn't even mention Manny Ramirez. I mean, their lineup is great as far as what they can do with the bats. The Dodgers problem is starting pitching. Who is the Dodger? What starting pitching do they have that scares you as far as being the stopper, lockdown number one pitcher? Because everybody in the division has one. Even San Diego, with Chris Young, has a guy that you can make a case to be at number one. The Dodgers don't have that right now. I mean, the Dodgers, you know, when you talk about Billingsley, Vasante Padilla, Hiroki Corona, Clayton Kershaw has the talent. We know he has the talent. He's only 21, 22 years old, but he's not at that level of maturity yet as far as handling that pressure of being a number one guy. They don't have a number one pitcher, and that's going. I mean, they have a great bullpen, not a good bullpen, a great bullpen. But their starting pitching did them in last year against the Phillies, and is going to do them in this season in terms of that division. Because the division is better. Even San Diego at the bottom is going to be better than what they were last year. They finished last season strong. Division is better all around. I think the Dodgers are going to struggle a bit. I think they'll be contending for the wild card. They'll be in it. They'll compete for that division, but I do not think the Dodgers will win this division. Again, their lineup is great, but that pitching staff, to me, they will put too much pressure on their bullpen. I think that lack of a number one pitcher will do them in. And also remember, don't forget about the McCord situation with the divorce and the whole Frank McCord divorce, that situation. And why is that important, you say? Because if they want to make a move to possibly get a pitcher is available on the market mid-season, they want to go out there and make a move, make a trade, and they have all the resources to do so, they're not going to be able to make a big-time trade because of their financial situation with this divorce, with the McCord's divorce going on. They are financially strapped as far as spending money in terms of free agency and in terms of possibly making a trade. So the McCord, that situation has not been resolved yet. That will definitely have an impact on the Dodgers this season. So don't forget about that as far as them trying to make a big deal at the trading deadline if they need a pitcher. And they're not gonna need an at bat unless somebody gets, if they stay healthy as far as their lineup goes. They won't need, offense is not gonna be, it's not the problem for the Dodgers. It won't be the problem again if they stay healthy. They're gonna be looking for a starting pitcher. And that's all there is to it. And they're not gonna be able to make a big time move considering that the divorce situation. The wild card is Arizona. Arizona is a team that can go in either direction. They have a lot of talented young players. Mark Reynolds, Chris Young, Connor Jackson. They just gave Justin Upton a contract extension. And it's amazing how he has surpassed his brother BJ as being the main player when BJ was so dominant in that postseason a couple of years ago with the Devil Rays. But to me, it comes down to their pitching. If Danny Herring can get some help, the key is Brandon Webb and Edwin Jackson. You know what you're going to get out of Danny Herring. Danny Herring was one of the best pitchers in baseball last year. He pitched much better than what his record was. He just didn't get the run support. But to me, getting Edwin Jackson was a steal from Detroit. If Brandon Webb can stay healthy, if you can go every three days, Herring, Webb and Jackson at the top of your rotation, you can compete with anybody. I like Chad Qualls as a closer. Again, offensively, they're going to score a lot of runs. They strike out too much, though, way too much, that lineup. But that lineup is going to score runs. The key for them is their pitching and their defense. Their defense was awful last year. I know the management is emphasizing fundamentals defense. We'll see. But Arizona, keep your eye on Arizona because, again, they can go in either direction. I can see them. Arizona can win a division. I mean, they can either win a division or they can finish in last along with San Diego. So they can go in. They're going to be a very interesting team to watch. I think myself that they will compete for a wild card spot. I think they'll compete for a wild card spot, and they will give Arizona, Colorado, and they'll give Colorado, the Dodgers, and the Giants all they can handle as far as dealing with them, as far as competing with those teams. This division is, again, this is a great division as far as pitching goes. It's tailored. If you don't have pitching in this division, then forget about it. The ballparks where you look at Pac Bell, where you look at San Diego's ballpark, all the ballparks are, you know, the Dodgers ballpark has been a pitcher's ballpark for years. It's all designed about, it's, you know, all the ballparks are tailored for great pitching and to have pitching. So if you that's how you built your team with pitching and defense, especially in this division. And again, this division has more pitching, more quality pitching than probably any division in baseball. And you need that to survive in this particular division. So again, the NL West is a very underrated division. Listen, the AL East is probably the toughest division because you have two championship caliber teams. Some people think three with Tampa Bay. I don't think anybody out of this division can win a championship. I think the Giants are still maybe a year away. The Giants are a year away. Maybe Colorado. I shouldn't say Colorado would have a chance. Colorado would have a shot against the World Series. So maybe Colorado, but this, from top to bottom, this division is as balanced as there is in all of baseball. Ian, I made fun of San Diego. San Diego will be improved. They're getting Chris Young back. They still have Adrian Gonzalez. How long Adrian Gonzalez is a Padre remains to be seen. He is the best bargain in baseball right now. A guy who's going to have 40 home runs, who is only going to make $4.5 million this year and $5.5 million in 2011. So I expect him to be traded before the deadline's up. Definitely somebody out there in baseball is going to need a big-time bat. Red Sox, in the worst way, tried to get him last year, well, to join them along with a couple other teams. So I expect him to be moved. But San Diego will have, they have some nice young talent, but they are, you know, a work in progress to say the least. So there you go with the NL West. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, almost creeping up towards the top of the hour, 11 o'clock hour. We'll talk about the NBA playoff push and Jerry Colangelo. How serious is Jerry Colangelo about USA Olympic commitments? We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Cyril Quinn taking you to the bottom half of the 11 o'clock hour. Kobe Bryant has signed a 3-year extension to remain with the Los Angeles Lakers through 2013-2014 season. Bryant could have opted out after this season and became a free agent. New York Yankee third baseman Alex Rodriguez claims he never received performance-enhancing drugs from Canadian doctor Anthony Galea. Galea claimed that he treated Rodriguez in March of 2009 after A-Rod had hip surgery. NBA scores: the Lakers snap a 2-game losing streak and defeat the Utah Jazz 106-92. Big game out of Lamar Odom with 26 points. San Antonio continues to play well. They defeat Orlando 112-100. Manu Ginobili has a big game with 43 points. With that loss, Cleveland clinches home court advantage throughout the Eastern Conference. It's only a matter of time before they get it throughout the NBA as well, as they defeat Atlanta 93-81. Cleveland gets win number 60. Just the 12th team in NBA history to have back-to-back years of 60 wins or more. Houston shocks Boston 119-114. Boston's third straight loss at home in overtime, 119-114. Phoenix over Detroit, clobbers Detroit 109-94. Phoenix playing well right now. They've won 10 straight and had jumped to number three in the Western Conference. Chicago over Washington 95-87. Miami led by Dwayne Wade's 43 points, 105-96 over Indiana. Charlotte in overtime, 87-86 over a good Milwaukee team right now. And, of course, the Golden State Warriors, 128. The New York Knicks, 117. David Lee, of course, had a monster game, 37 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 assists for the Knickerbockers. Looking at the NBA right now, the Eastern Conference, forget about it. As far as the Cleveland has wrapped up the East as far as home court advantage, interesting battle between Boston and Atlanta for that third and fourth spot. Now, again, that's very important that you avoid number four. If you're Atlanta, you do not want to see the Cleveland Cavaliers in the second round. So not only either spot you're going to have home court in the first round, either spot, whether you're third or fourth, is automatic home court. But again, you don't want to see Boston in the second round if you are Boston or Atlanta. Boston right now is just, they thought they were playing well. They've kind of regressed with some home losses. They're old. There's no getting around that. And I could easily see them slipping and going, having a number four seed and having to deal with Cleveland in the second round. The Western Conference is much more interesting as far as playoff seeds because the Lakers have a comfortable 5-game lead over Dallas and Phoenix. But once you get past the Lakers, 2-5, you have one game separating number two Dallas versus number five Denver. Okay? One game separates four teams. Dallas right now and Phoenix are tied for the second spot. Dallas second, Phoenix third. They have all had the same record. Utah is fourth at 50-27. Utah had a chance to make a statement last night, but again, they never beat the Lakers in a big spot. Denver is 5 at 49-27. They have their issues. Oklahoma City is not that far from Denver. Only a game and a loss count with 28 losses. San Antonio and Portland, again, a better race to keep your eye on. Yeah, I mean, here's how tight the Western Conference is, 2-8, okay? 2-5 separated by one game, and 6-8 is separated by one game. Two games in a loss column, 6-8. That's how tight that conference is. Like, you could have a 2 or 3 game losing streak and go from 2nd to 8th. Or 2nd to 7th. Dallas is only 4 games ahead of Portland, which is a lot now considering there's only six or seven games left. But where you want to finish, either 2nd, 3rd. I say you want to finish 2nd, 3rd, 6th, or 7th. 2nd, 3rd, 6th, or 7th. Because 4th and 5th, Lakers in the second round. 8th, Lakers in the first round. So you want to avoid the Lakers until the conference finals. The team to watch out for, to keep your eye on, to me right now, in the Western Conference, that would scare me to death, even would make me a little nervous as a Laker fan, is the San Antonio Spurs. San Antonio Spurs right now are in seventh place. They will play Dallas right now if the season were to end, and they are just a half game behind Oklahoma City for the 6th spot, just a half game ahead of Portland for the 8th spot. San Antonio is playing very well right now. They've beaten Cleveland. They've beaten Orlando. They've had some excellent wins. In the last week alone, I know the games were at home, but still, beat Cleveland and Orlando, that's doing something. And Manu Ginobili has found his game. I mean, I don't know whether he went to an acupuncture specialist. I don't know something has happened to Manu Ginobili because he's not the same player that we saw over the course of the this is not the same player that we saw at the beginning of the season and throughout last season. He's playing great right now. He looks like the Manu Ginobili of 2005, 2007, when the Spurs were winning championships. And they're doing this without Tony Parker. They have a deep bench. They have, Duncan hasn't played well, but they haven't needed Duncan to play great. You know, just George Hill is playing well. So they are a very dangerous team. And they are capable of beating anybody. I think they can beat anybody in the first round outside of the Lakers. Like, all those series are going to be compelling. And, so let's say you get a Dallas San Antonio or a Dallas San Antonio. Who are you picking in that? I mean, Dallas would be favored, but, that could be an easier seven-game series. How about if you get Phoenix, Oklahoma City? Yes, Phoenix is number three, but Oklahoma City has had that number this year. How about Utah, Denver in the first round? I mean, you're going to have some great first-round series in the – you're going to have some very compelling first-round series in the Western Conference. How about if you got the Lakers and San Antonio in the first round, which is possible. I don't think that the way San Antonio is playing right now, I don't think San Antonio will finish in the eighth spot. I think that you're either going to have Portland or Oklahoma City finish in that eighth spot. And you may have to guess it. It's probably going to be Portland, considering how Oklahoma City has played throughout the course of this season. So the Western Conference is going to be very interesting to watch out for. And just, I mean, listen, overall in general, there's a lot of talk about the Lakers this week and how they're playing. I don't think there's any news to be a newsflash. The Lakers are absolutely all right for the picking. I mean, the Lakers can absolutely be beaten this year. I don't think by anybody in the Western Conference, because I don't trust Denver. I still don't think Dallas is good enough. But, can Cleveland beat the Lakers in the series, in the finals? Absolutely. Could Orlando beat the Lakers in the playoff series, in the finals? Yes. Definitely. So, the Lakers have the issue, same issues that they've had throughout the course of this season. Their bench, they get nothing out of their bench. Ron Artest has not fit in offensively with the team. And they count too much. They count too much on just, turning on and off. There's been nothing new. And Bynum's injured right now. So there's been nothing new to Los Angeles Lakers over the course of in terms of their issues as far as what they're dealing with. But again, at worst, they're going to be in the NBA Finals. So, you can call them vulnerable, in which they are, but they're going to be in the NBA Finals. They still are the class of the Western Conference, clearly to me. Still the class of the Western Conference. I mean, Phoenix, Utah, Denver right now, without Kenyon Martin, Denver's not going anywhere. They're just not. I mean, they're not the same team. Who knows when Kenyon Martin's going to be back with that knee injury. Also, LeBron James said that he probably won't play in the Olympics, the World Championships this summer, which is kind of important because Jerry Colangelo has stuck to his guns, basically saying that, you're not guaranteed a spot in 2012 in London if you don't have the full 3-year commitment. I want to see Jerry Colangelo, very interesting because guys like Wade, Bosch, and James probably will not play. I doubt, and I wouldn't be surprised if even Kobe Bryant didn't play, considering how beat up, if he gets to the finals, it'll be 3 straight years in the finals, coming off the thumb injury, ankle, back. I wouldn't be surprised if Kobe Bryant didn't play. I want to see Jerry Colangelo, I want to very interested to see how Colangelo is going to handle this in terms of how this Olympic team is going to be chosen with these guys, with these big names sitting out. Now, none of this is official. I mean, James was just, he hasn't talked to Colangelo. He was just basically running off at the mouth to a reporter about that, and James got into his personal schedule, and he's making a movie. He has a lot going on. He has the finals. He's probably gonna be in the finals or be close to the finals. So, basically said I have a busy summer, so there's a chance I might not be in it. So it'll be very interesting to see what these guys do, and if Jerry Colangelo again sticks to his guns and chooses other players to play for that 2012 Olympic team. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. It was 20 years ago this week that we saw one of the most dominant performances in NCAA tournament history. We'll talk about that team and their place in history and why, and explain to me, explain why exactly are they angry at the world. We'll talk about that. And also, I will give you my final four predictions, and I will tell you which coach I would go, that I would want to, that I would want to go to bat with, that I would want on my team out of the final four coaches, which one that I, that which one is the best, and which coach would be, you know, and which coach would I, you know, what you want on your bench in this final, in this particular final four. You might be surprised by my answer. It's not certainly not the one you're thinking about. So stay tuned to that in the next segment of the Saturday morning wake up call. Just 10 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, we'll be right back. We'll be right back after this update. Kobe Bryant has signed a 3-year extension to remain with the Los Angeles Lakers through 2013-2014 season. Bryant could have opted out after the season and became a free agent. New York Yankee third baseman Alex Rodriguez claims he never received performance enhancing drugs from Canadian doctor Anthony Galea. Galea claimed that he treated Rodriguez in March of 2009 after A-Rod had hip surgery. NBA scores: Lakers snap a 2-game losing streak with a 106-92 win over Utah. Cleveland wins its 6th game of the season, 93-88 over Atlanta. Houston gets by Boston in overtime, 119-114. Phoenix crushes Detroit, 109-94. Phoenix has won 10 straight. San Antonio continues to play well with a 112-100 victory over Orlando. Manu Ginobili goes for 43 points. Charlotte, Chicago, Miami, all were winners, and Golden State, all were winners in the association last night. It was 20 years ago that the Running Rebels, led by Chris Larry Johnson, Greg Anthony, Stacey Augmon, all who were first round picks in the 1991 draft, first round picks in the 1991 draft, ran Duke out of the building in the 1990 championship, 103-73. I know on my page, on my Facebook page, I had 170. It was not 170, 103-73. I know it was a 30-point dismantling. Again, to this day, and as dominant as North Carolina was last year in that first half against Michigan State, to this day, that is the most dominant performance in a championship game that I've ever seen. And remember, that Duke team was that was Duke's second straight Final Four. You know, following the 89 loss to Seton Hall in the national semifinal. Christian Leyden was on that team. Alan Abdelnaby was on that team. I believe Thomas Hill was a freshman on that team. It was a good Duke team. It was a very good Duke. Billy McCaffrey. I mean, that Duke team was a very good Duke team. The following year when they beat UNLV was much better because you added Grant Hill and Antonio Lane, guys like that, especially too with Grant Hill. Bobby Hurley was on that team that lost to UNLV. I mean, that was still a very good Duke team, and UNLV absolutely toyed with them that night. I mean, the first half was relatively close. UNLV was up, you know, I forgot what the halftime score was, but second half they hit Duke with an 18-0 run. And they just, again, they ran Duke out of the gym. And the thing about that UNLV team that stands out to me is how good they were against, you know, the great competition. I mean, you forget, people talk about that Duke game, the championship game, which obviously you will remember considering they beat them by 30. But the national semifinal, they beat Georgia Tech, a Georgia Tech team that featured, you know, was Lethal Weapon 3, was, you know, James Oliver, of course, Kenny Anderson, and Dennis Scott. All three guys averaged 20 points a game. That was a big time Georgia Tech team, probably the best Georgia Tech team in their school's history. They won an entertaining game in that national semifinal against them. They destroyed Loyola Marymount, you know, had that dream season with the Hank Gass passing away. Beat them by 30 in the regional final. Again, that UNLV team was a big-time team. Remember the following year, they started out the season 34-0 before they lost to Duke in the national semifinal. Again, with Leighton hitting the free throws and with, you know, Larry Johnson passing up on a three-point shot And which I'll never understand that in that particular game. But again, that, you know, UNLV, you know, they play basketball against fast break. You know, they were a defensive led team. Yeah, you know, Tarkanian, Tark the Shark. A lot of controversy surrounding them. I mean, there were rumors of, you know, agents and things of that nature. A lot of stuff that they, I mean, and, you know, I mentioned that they are angry to this day about how they were perceived as thugs and what have you. But some of that stuff was had to be attributed to them. You know, when you get caught in a hot tub with a guy who shaves points, you know, who has fixed games, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, you know, Anderson Hunt and Moses Scurry, we got caught in a hot tub with that point shaver, dude, who was shaving points. I mean, how many violations did Jerry Tarkanian have at Long Beach State? The reason why he couldn't at Long Beach State, and a lot of stuff was put on themselves. But again, one thing you can talk about the off the court stuff, and you know how many violations, how many stuff that they were doing off the court, which I don't think it was that. I don't think it was that excessive. But what they did on the court, I mean, that 1919 team, which to me, again, was the most dominant, was the best college basketball team that I've seen in my time. Now, the '96 Kentucky team was great. They were deep, and this UNLV team was a dominant team. And what they did to Duke, think about who they beat. They beat Duke by 30 points in a championship game. Duke by 30. So when you talk about team dominant teams over the last 20 years, suddenly you put Duke's 92 team up there that repeated as national champions. I mean, you had to put Florida as repeat national champions. You had to put Kentucky, 96 team up there. Carolina's 2005 team was a big-time team, though they didn't dominate. But this team, to me, this was the best out of all of them, this 1990 UNLV team. And again, they don't get the kind of credit that they deserve considering how good they were. They really don't. It's unfortunate because they had, again, you had some, when you talk about Greg Anthony, I mean, anybody remembers that Duke game 91, the second Duke game? They were in control of that game until Greg Anthony fouled out. The whole complexity of that game changed when Greg Anthony fouled out. And he was a point guard, he was a leader, he was an emotional leader. He fouls out. If he would have fouled out, they would have won that game. So I think this was a great college basketball team. They were fun to watch. They were like how Tarkanian built that program was kind of like how Bobby Bowden built Florida State. You know, not a lot of history beforehand, but we will take on anybody at any time, any place. They would play Arkansas, they would play North, they would play whoever in the regular season, whoever. I mean, they would play LSU, who was a top program at that time, to play Arizona. They would play them at their own buildings and beat them. So they had that kind of me against the world mentality, that kind of, you know, just bunker mentality. And Tarkanian, again, for 19 years, had that program rolling, absolutely rolling. I mean, he still has one of the highest winning percentages of all time. I think he won over 8% of his games at UNLV. We took them to couple Final Fours, won the championship in 1990, should have won the championship in 91. I think, despite the fact that Duke upset them, I think UNLV was the best team. They will go down as one of the great teams not to win a championship in a particular year, that 91 team. The 91 team, you had Larry Johnson, all those guys were seniors in terms of Johnson, Ogden, and Greg Anthony. And Anderson Hunt as well. So I think that team, you know, that was a special team. And again, a team that does not get the kind of credit that it deserves. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call final segment time, I will give you my predictions. And again, which coach of my team, I'll give you that and much more still to come on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Kobe Bryant has signed a 3-year extension to remain with the Los Angeles Lakers through the 2013-2014 season. Bryant could have opted out after this season and became a free agent. New York Yankee third baseman Alex Rodriguez claims he never received performance-enhancing drugs from Canadian doctor Anthony Galea. Galea claims that he treated Rodriguez in March of 2009 after A-Rod had hip surgery. NBA scores. Cleveland wins its sixth game of the season, 93-88, as Cleveland clinches home court advantage throughout the Eastern Conference playoffs. The Lakers defeat Utah 106-92. They gain out Lamar Odom 26 points. Houston 119, Boston 114. Phoenix wins this 10th straight in overtime. Phoenix wins this 10th straight game, defeating Detroit 109-94. Miami 105, Indiana 96. Charlotte edges out Milwaukee 87-86 in overtime. San Antonio over Orlando 112-100. And Charlotte, Chicago too much for Washington 95-87. Golden State over Knicks 128-117. Welcome back. 21 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, April 3rd, 2010. Predictions in terms of the Final Four. Listen, I'm not going to change it up from what I've had, from what I thought about at the beginning of the tournament. West Virginia, I've been on West Virginia since the Big East tournament. I picked them to lose in the championship game against Syracuse, and I haven't seen anything that would have me change that pick. I understand they don't have the point guard. They didn't need him against Kentucky, and Kentucky has a pressure, has pressure D. I don't think they're going to need him against Duke. The thing about West Virginia, the one intangible that they have over all of these teams as far as in the Final Four is they are a team that does not have to shoot the ball well, nor do they have to play well in order to win. They have a way of making the game ugly. They have a way of, just winning these games where you look at the score sheet and you say, how in the world did they win this game? And coming into this Final Four, they're only shooting 40% from the field. Now, they've made timely three-pointers, and they have done a great job rebounding-wise. And they defend like crazy. I mean, they are a great defensive team. They have a lot of length. I don't know how much zone they're going to be able to play against Duke. I think they're going to have to pick and choose when they play zone because Duke does have guys that can knock down three-point shots, and I guarantee you, even on a bad shooting night from three-point land, Duke will not shoot 4-for-32. But again, they are the type of team that can give Duke problems as far as their athleticism, their length, and to me, they have the best player on the floor in Deshaun Butler. Deshaun Butler has been as clutch as it's come this season in college basketball, made buzzer beaters. And again, there's an intangible about West Virginia that I like. I can understand people picking Duke because of a lot of talent. Duke also is a great rebounding team. Duke has a three-headed monster in Nolan Smith, Shire, and Singler. You don't expect Singler to be 0-for-10 like he was against, not to make a field goal like he did against. Against Baylor. But again, West Virginia to me, it's something to be said when you can win games and not shoot the ball well. I mean, a lot of teams depend, like, any of these teams have bad shooting nights. Michigan State, Butler, Duke, they're going out. I mean, they have terrible shooting nights. They're going out, but they're going to be out of the tournament. But again, I like West Virginia to play for the national championship over Duke. I like West Virginia to play for the national championship. Who they will play, that team from Lansing, as far as, you know, Michigan, that team from Lansing, coached by who I think right now, pound for pound, is the best coach in college basketball in time, Izzo. Michigan State has been doubted from the start of this tournament up until this point. Again, everybody, you know, is on Butler. You know, Butler this, Butler that. The one thing, let me keep this. Remember one thing about Butler and about first-year coaches, first-time Final Four coaches. Normally, it takes a coach a second, a third time to get back to Final Four before he has any success. Okay, Bill Self is an aberration. Most times, coaches get to the Final Four, their first time, they come up short. I can see the Butler has, to me, you know, normally if a Butler makes a Final Four, and Butler was not a Cinderella, they were a top 10 team beforehand, they get excellent recruits, they are a legit program. But normally, they would go in as, you know, Cinderella, and they would go in as a team with basically nothing to lose. That is not the case. To me, Butler playing, you know, not playing in Indianapolis, in the same state, in their home state, it kind of cancels out the pressure or the lack of pressure that they would have in another, if this Final Four were in New Orleans or something. I can see them being distracted by playing at home. I can see the pressure getting to them. I can see, you know, just all this, you know, all this talk about, you know, the coach and all this stuff, just not knowing how to handle all this, all the hype that comes with making the Final Four. When you compare them to Michigan State, again, Michigan State has lived in the Final Four over the past 12 years, six times in the last 12 years. This is an experienced Michigan State team. They were in the Final Four and they, you know, played for the national championship last year. I like Michigan State in this game. I think it will be a very physical game. I think Michigan State will pound Butler on the boards. And they have, with all due respect to Butler's coach, who's very good and is going on his way to becoming a star, they have Tom Izzo. I mean, Tom Izzo is as good as it gets right now in college basketball. With equal talent, there's nobody better than Tom Izzo right now in college basketball. And that includes Calhoun, Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, whoever you want to throw in there, whoever, Cal Perry, name the guy, whoever you want to compare him to. That he is the best coach in college basketball. You take into consideration that the guy got this team to the Final Four without their best player, who, by the way, is their point guard. He's the best coach in college basketball. Any one of these teams, Duke, Butler, or West Virginia, loses their best player in the second round of the tournament. Not only would they not made it to the Final Four, they might not even made it to the Elite Eight. Okay? That's how good a coach he is, that he can lose his best player and still get to a Final Four. And it's not like it's a dominant Michigan State team. They're very good. They have good players. They're very good. Better than what people think. They're not. You know, we've seen, he's had better Michigan State teams, okay? This is not the best team he's had. Truthfully, I thought the team last year was better. Okay? They played better together. This year, they kind of were uneven. Kind of, you know, struggled with chemistry, but he's found a way to get his team to the Final Four, and I think he will play West Virginia for a national championship come Monday night. So I like Michigan State, and I like West Virginia to play in a national championship game on Monday night. Coming up on Monday, 8 o'clock, the national championship. We will talk about Red Sox Yankees, which will take place on Monday night. Sunday night, of course. We'll talk about opening day in baseball. I do have some fun, you know, with some predictions as far as who I think we'll win World Series, who my playoff teams will be, MVP, Cy Young, so I'll get to that. And I also, again, but we will do a lot of college, of course, college basketball title game, look back on the Final Four, of course, and we'll have some fun with that. Again, coming up on the night, Saturday morning, wake up call, 8 o'clock. Again, hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. Also, you can find me at Facebook, William Gerald, and at any comments or questions that you may have. I will see you Monday at 8 o'clock on Championship.